Joining us now at Down Goes Brown on Twitter is how you know him, Sean McIndoe, great writer at Sportsnet and Vice Sports and the hockey news. And he joins us now here on the Jeff Blair Show. Thanks for doing this, Sean. We're all over Sid this morning, right? He wins the back-to-back Conn Smythe trophies. And we talked about it before the series started. If he's able to win this, if he's able to dominate again, where does his place in hockey history stand? Is he now on the Mount Rushmore of hockey players that we think about, the Gordie Howes, the Wayne Gretzky's, the Bobby Orr's?
Well, you know what? I think he's making a real strong case for top five at the very least. Mount Rushmore is a little tough because I think if you're going top four, boy, that on my top four, that would mean he'd have to bump Mario Lemieux out of a spot, and geez, that would be a heck of a debate in Pittsburgh and everywhere else. But he's certainly in the discussion, and to do that, for a guy who hasn't even turned 30 years old yet is impressive, maybe bordering on the ridiculous.
Yeah, and staying healthy is a skill, but it's hard not to wonder what would happen had Sid not sustained a couple of the concussions. I'm not really a huge Mount Rushmore guy. I like to try to appreciate players for who they are, not really comparing them across era. I just think it's so difficult. Yeah, it's kind of fun bar fodder. There's no way that I think that Sidney Crosby can ever pass the individual brilliance of Mario Lemieux, and so it's a really tough comparison, especially considering, you know, Lemieux kept the Penguins in Pittsburgh, essentially.
And also Gretzky had like 1,000 points before he turned 23.
Although, what is insane is looking at Sid and seeing that he's fifth all-time in points per game. He's like a small fraction behind Marcel Dion. Oh, sorry, he's sixth. He's a fraction behind for sixth. And it's like era-adjusted. It's wild to think about that. But, I mean, going aside from Sid for a second, I have a beef with you.
Let me hear it.
Okay, so you provide the hockey world with a lot of levity in dark times. Would you say that's fair?
I would hope so, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And here we were, watching Shania Twain, completely twisted. And
no, I wasn't watching. I was cringing.
Yeah, I was cringing too. I was pleading with Scott Oak, please, Scotty, wrap it up, buddy. And I go to your Twitter. I'm just like, Brown's going to have something funny about this. And nothing. You choked. You choked on the biggest stage.
There's a saying about people in glass houses, and I'll just say I've watched a hockey game or two in my time where maybe I wasn't in ideal condition to give a nationally televised interview, and luckily enough, Scott Oak never showed up with a microphone on my couch in front of the TV. So I'm going to there, but for the grace of the hockey gods, go I, and I'm just going to keep my mouth closed on that one.
Fine, that's fair. You wrote about heading into this one, which was some nice foreshadowing about Game 6 and the overtime trends and how it tends to get a little bit weird. Brett Hull skating the crease, Patty Kane, the squeaker against the Flyers, the non-call against Gretzky. This was basically overtime, and that one felt weird as well. And I laughed again going back to your Twitter about how the NHL just wanted to have a moment. You want to have someone finish in a way that they can replay over and over and over again, and Hornqvist gets an ugly squeaker. Did you feel bad for Predators fans, or did you think that that was kind of fair that the way things played out, considering that they didn't get a penalty called against them, they got a cheap 5-on-3, they weren't able to score another goal despite Sissons getting a million different chances. I felt bad for their fans because they were great, but I didn't feel like there was a great injustice done in that game.
You know, it's tough. I mean, there's never just one play in a hockey game, even though we do kind of focus in on it. And I mean, we always say when a game is in overtime or when it feels like it's in overtime, like it was last night, we always say it's probably going to be an ugly goal. And that one was one. I mean, I hope everyone enjoyed it last night because you will probably never see that goal again in any of the highlight reels or montages or anything like that. But that's how it goes sometimes, and that's hockey. I think obviously the play we're all going to be talking about forever is the waved off goal, the early whistle, and I can't lecture Predators fans on not feeling bad or angry or holding a grudge over that call. I'm the same guy who still isn't over the Carey Fraser thing 24 years later, and I have no immediate plans to get over it. So I'm the last one who should tell anyone to just accept some human error and let it go. But I mean that one was unfortunate because, you know what, I think there's a whole lot of rules and a whole lot of situations in this league that aren't handled very well, and that the league should realize that, and they should see it coming, and they should be proactive and maybe make some changes. before we have a situation play out in the Stanley Cup final or something like that. But I don't put that call into that category. I mean, this was just, it was a blown call. It happens. I'm sure everyone feels terrible about it. And that's not excusing it, because at this level, you can't have a play like that at that moment. But I don't think it's something that points to a bigger problem or a bigger issue or something that, you know, we need to go change in rules. I think, unfortunately, that's just something that's going to happen a couple of times a year. And for the NHL and the Predators, it happened at the worst possible time.
Yeah, I don't even think you can change that rule.
No, there's not much you can do.
No, but I mean, the one thing I've heard from people is, you know, do we review it? Is there some way that you can go upstairs and say, look, the puck was free, it was going to be a goal, we can...
But it's blown dead already, you know? Like, it's just, you can't get around that.
And once the whistle goes, the play's got to stop. Because I'll tell you right now, if you make that a reviewable play, if you say that, hey, if the whistle goes, but the puck was free and it goes in the net, we're still, it's open season. You're gonna have every scramble in the crease. Everyone's gonna keep going. There's no reason to stop when there's a whistle, because hey, who knows? Maybe we can jam the puck free. Maybe I gotta keep hacking away on this guy, to make sure he doesn't put the puck in the net. It's the law of unintended consequences would kick in there. When the whistle goes, I mean, this is sports. This isn't the NHL. This is everything. The whistle goes, the play's dead, and that's how it goes.
Sean McIndoe, our guest here on the Jeff Blair Show, Dan Riccio and JD Bunkus filling in over the next couple of days. Here in this time slot, the Patrick Hornfist goal, and I know you had a great tweet about it, as you do many things, but it kind of was a symbol of the series and how these two teams got to this point. And obviously Pittsburgh benefited from some high class draft picks really working out, but the Predators, they've gotten to this point by hitting on a lot of lower-end draft picks. Pekka Rinne in a round that does not even exist anymore. Patrick Hornqvist was a good find with the last pick of the draft, as you mentioned on Twitter. You know, like, these two teams, both of them, have found some real good players in the later rounds of the draft. And if you're going to build the Cup contender, you definitely have to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I know we all focus on, especially with Pittsburgh, with the high picks. And a lot of people are that the old Brian Burke saying that they just won a lottery, and that's not necessarily a model. And yeah, they did. That's how you get Sidney Crosby, and that was a big step, obviously, to where they got today. But there's more than just that. As we've seen with other teams, you can hit those big pick or two, but if you don't surround them with the right talent, you don't get there. And full credit to these two teams for drafting well and doing that, and also full credit to these two teams for trading well. These are two teams that were built largely on the trades that they made. Certainly you look at Nashville with Ryan Johansson, with PK Subban, the big deals that David Poyle's pulled off, and Jim Rutherford in Pittsburgh going out and getting Phil Kessel, going out and getting some of these other guys, including Patrick Hornqvist, who goes and scores the winning goal. We're told so often these days that you just can't trade in today's NHL, and the salary cap makes it too hard, and there's GMs in this league who almost never trade, and fans just seem to shrug their shoulders and accept that, you know, I guess they just can't do that anymore. And these are two teams that have shown us that, yeah, yes, you can, and you can build big pieces of a Stanley Cup contender or a Stanley Cup winner by getting out there and just rolling up your sleeves and making some old-fashioned deals. And hopefully we'll see a few of those over the next few days and maybe into the summer as some teams try to copy the success of Nashville and Pittsburgh.
Yeah, it's funny with all the head-scratching that went on when Pittsburgh was adding so many depth defensemen at the deadline. Even Riccio losing his mind about the Leafs giving up the asset that is
You're
Frank
never going to let me live that
no,
down.
No, I never will. You tweeted it. It's on record.
Frankie Corrado's going to be in their top six next year.
I'm looking at this today. Again, it's a lot about Sidney Crosby. It's a lot about his legacy, where he ranks all time, his performance, the back-to-back Conn Smythe. But Geno Malkin did lead the finals in points. And while he never took over a game quite like Sid, I'm not going to argue that he was even close to being the Conn Smythe winner. I thought that it was Sid by a million miles by the end of it. I can't help but think today, is Geno Malkin's legacy greater because he's played with Sidney Crosby, or would he have been better on his own?
Boy, you know, that's a good question. I mean, it is tough. You wonder if maybe he's kind of gotten slotted into that Scottie Pippen to Sidney Crosby's Michael Jordan role and isn't getting that respect. I mean, we certainly saw that this year with the NHL with their vaunted top 100 players list, and Evgeny Malkin somehow does not make that list, despite him being an MVP, a Conn Smythe, where you go down the list of everything this guy's accomplished, multiple Art Rosses, and Jim Rutherford seems to still be carrying a grudge over that, and made a point of mentioning it last night. I think that, would he have been better off somewhere else, maybe where he was just the guy? But you know what? This is not a guy that you can point to and say that he's just, he's just dining on those second line matchups because everyone has to focus on Sidney Crosby, and so he gets easier. I mean, he's been at his very best during those long stretches where Sidney Crosby's been hurt, hasn't been around. Those are situations where the Penguins could have really taken a dive in the standings.
Yeah, that's what makes it so interesting to me, is that it does seem like he elevates his game when Sid is out, that he's a different player when he is the guy.
We say this about a lot of players, but I think Malkin is a classic case of a guy that maybe we're not going to fully appreciate until he's gone, until he retires, and then we're sitting there a couple years later going, holy smokes, this guy really was one of the very best centers ever, and just happened to be often the number two center on his own team through no fault of his own. But this is not a guy who's just dined on easy matchups and let Sidney Crosby do the heavy lifting, and hopefully that narrative can go away after we've seen him yet once again this playoffs be very productive and be a big piece of the Penguins winning another Stanley Cup.
Yeah, and again, he does end up with 4 appearances, 3 wins. He does have a Conn Smythe of his own. It's hard to imagine. I mean, it's hard to say that he would have at least had one of those cups without Sid. So there is that. But yeah, he has elevated his game. He does look like a guy who could be a number one. He has been overlooked, again, by the top 100 list. And I think that by people in general, you mentioned the Scottie Pippen comparison. I think that's really fair. And yet he might be one of, the top 5 centers of his generation. And yet it does feel like he's a lot lower on that list, that he's not even nearly as appreciated as even a guy like, say, Joe Thornton. So I do wonder, it's something that, we'll never know. But I there is a small part of me that just kind of does feel like, maybe he would have been better off on his own. I wouldn't mind seeing what a Geno Malkin-led team would look like. By the way, when we talk about Conn Smythe, I thought Sid was a million miles away. I thought that he would win even if Nashville had been able to come back and win. Do you feel that way? Who was Nashville's Conn Smythe winner if they were able to come back? Was it someone that we didn't know yet? They would have had to prove themselves in the last 2 games? Because there was no one that separated themselves from me on that team.
Yeah, I mean, it was a strange situation because Pekka Rinne was the guy who separated himself over the first 3 rounds, and then he brought himself right back to the pack, certainly with those first 2 games and maybe game 5 as well. I mean, I think for Nashville to win that series, they would have needed Pekka Rinne to have 2 real big games. And, he was good last night. Certainly, I mean, you give up 1 goal, you've done just about all you can do. But I think probably it winds up with him. I think we're largely, for whatever reason, we seem to be past the days where players on losing teams seem to get a lot of Conn Smythe love. But I think it would have been probably a Pekka Rinne if he had played well. If there was some sort of crazy 6-5 game in game 7, then I don't know, maybe it's one of the blue liners, maybe it's somebody else. But you're right, this was a weird year for both teams, because until the last few games where Sidney Crosby really seemed to find another gear and put forward that sort of dominant game we're used to seeing, it almost felt like there weren't any real favorites, and you had some of these strange ideas being thrown around about splitting the vote and this and that. So I think at the end of the day, the Conn Smythe voters, I'm sure, are happy that Sidney Crosby did what he did over the last few games and made the decision a little bit easier.
Yeah, no one on the Preds was really sticking out, other than maybe PK Subban for being that face of the Predators in these finals. And maybe he wasn't Conn Smythe worthy with his play. He was certainly fantastic through the playoffs. But what did you make of the Predators? And it seems that it was the Predators and not the NHL, obviously, kind of putting a muzzle on PK before game 6.
Yeah, I mean, the next time somebody points out that, the NHL with ratings are flat or revenues are flat, mm-hmm. or, it doesn't seem to be getting the attention they feel it should deserve, maybe south of the border, this is the kind of stuff we can point to. When you've got one of your most entertaining, most charismatic players on the very biggest stage, and he gets shut down really over,
over,
if this is a controversy, if Listerine and whatever else is what counts as stepping in the hockey world when you compare that to what guys are not only allowed to say but often encouraged to say in other sports, because this is the stuff that sells tickets and gets attention. I mean, geez, I know that there's a hockey culture out there that you never do anything to put yourself in the spotlight. You never do anything to in any way create any kind of a story around things. But I really wish that we, and I say we as a sport, I'm including the media in that group, because a lot of times we jump all over this stuff more than maybe we should. I wish we would get over that and just let guys have personalities and let what is supposed to be ultimately an entertainment business actually go out and provide a little bit of entertainment from time to time.
Yeah, they want to be zebras. They want everyone to camouflage all together in the herd. And you're right, like revenue, the cap's not going up this year. The players aren't going to trigger it because there's been no outside revenue. And I can't help but look at the NBA and say, wow, look at the way that these guys market their stars. Even the NFL is coming around a little bit, like saying like they're encouraging celebrations. And a lot of guys are not as afraid to speak out anymore. If you look at even the Bennett brothers, they're always entertaining. They always give you something. I thought it was laughable that people were pointing to PK Subban basically reinvigorating Sidney Crosby as though the best player on the planet needed some type of added motivation to become Sidney Crosby. That was great. And yeah, exactly. Like, you have this great opportunity where it's on a big stage, and hey, guess what? Like it or not, the Listerine comments and the back and forth between PK and Sid was something that was getting picked up. It was something that was going viral. It was on Twitter. There were a lot of clips of it. It was getting picked up by American Markets. I saw, pardon the interruption, had gone with that story. That's something that translates to a casual fan base. They look at PK Subban, they say, this guy's entertaining, I want to see more of this guy. And yeah, they take him away, they take him out of the limelight. And instead of hearing from him before the game, you're given Patrick Hornqvist to hear from. And
yay.
Like, yeah, it's, and Nashville's throwing, I can't even remember who, I was reading the transcripts of who they had before the game. And it's a litany of basically nobodies. The stars aren't there front and center. The NBA, you finish the game, the best player goes to the podium, except for the one time LeBron James doesn't go, but he still speaks. And generally those guys give some type of a meaty quote, whether it's Steve Kerr or Draymond Green, somebody gives something that translates and keeps the storylines going for us to digest and for fans to relate to. So yeah, really confusing stuff, really frustrating stuff, because I do love the league. I wish it was a bit more popular, but that kind of stuff always does irk me. Before we let you go, and thanks for the time today, it is a copycat league, and it's kind of hard not to look at Pittsburgh's defense corps and say, okay, Brian Dumoulin's your top guy. You're running Hainsey and Mata and Schultz out there. I know they do have Letang, but he wasn't there, and you still were able to win a Stanley Cup. Do you feel like this should affect the way that the Leafs address their offseason and how much they're willing to spend, especially in trade capital, for a blue liner?
You know, it might, because we've been hearing over the last dozen years now that you can't win a Stanley Cup unless you've got that Norris-caliber guy back there on the blue line. And we just saw an example, although, albeit an extreme example, when you look at what Pittsburgh has up front and in goal. But, yeah, maybe that's not the way to think. And it feels like, the market for defensemen really got thrown off a year ago with that Taylor Hall, Adam Larson trade, which I understand why Edmonton did it, but just a massive overpay to go out and get that deal done. And ever since then, every rumor involving a defenseman, the names and the price tags getting thrown around are just crazy. And it's so out of whack that it feels like everyone thinks they're going to get a Taylor Hall for their Adam Larson type guy. Maybe this is a little bit of a price correction here to the market that it gets a little more reasonable, and you're not expected to give up a 40 or 50 goal scorer just to get a guy you can plug in on your second pairing. I don't think that would be the worst thing in the world for the league to get the trade market moving a little bit, especially over the next few days. It's got a couple of teams that have got to make some maneuvers to get ready for the expansion draft.